I think we're going to put Goose off for a little while and go to 19 and 20. Wildlife damage management activities first.
Good morning. I guess I'll... What's that? I forgot it, sorry. Good morning. Nick Rossman here, Regional Wildlife Program Manager with South Dakota Game Fishing Parks, stationed here out of Watertown. I apologize with the schedule yesterday. I was going to have one of my field staff here kind of help support me, but so you got the backup here. He was going to give you a in-the-field, boots-on-the-ground perspective and help answer some questions and give some more examples, but I'll do the best I can. So right here, this is the overview of the fiscal 19 WDM program expenditures. You can see statewide, 58% of our expenditures went towards deer damage that landowners were experiencing. Over half of the expenses were deer. So if you can recall, the winter we had was, it seems like it just ended, and now we've got a dusting of snow on the ground. So we're going to be probably following something very similar to this. Let's just hope it holds off for a little bit. But we spent approximately $1.9 million last year overall, and we coded 20,000 hours to WDM. So WDM program is a landowner specific program. We take calls in from landowners that are experiencing damage, and those WDSs, wildlife damage specialists, are the ones that respond to those complaints. So how we respond to those is any returning customers that we've landowners that we've worked on in the past, they will call in, and typically they'll call directly to the wildlife damage specialist. Now, not everybody has utilized our program in the past, so if they do not have that number, they will call, you know, their local wildlife conservation officer or a regional or district office to request those services. Once we receive those calls from a landowner experiencing damage from any wildlife species to row crop, stored hay, feed for their livestock, anything like that, that those calls get forwarded on to those WDSs, and they'll respond typically within 48 hours. Our expectation is that we will respond within 48 hours, but that's a stretch. Most typically, we will be on site probably within 24 hours, and that's even a stretch. A lot of times, within the same day, as long as it's not far corners of the state and they don't have a full workload and planned out day, usually we'll be there that same day. But so typically when a landowner calls, they will get a call back from that wildlife damage specialist and kind of get some brief information from them, gather a little information, figure out what they can do, what tools they have, and what they need to bring with them to get the job done. So once they gather that information, they'll make an on-site investigation. They'll meet with the landowner if the landowner can make it, or they'll just simply take a look themselves, and they'll suggest some tools that they can use to help mitigate any continued damage and hopefully stop it completely. But what they will do is they'll talk about the tools and what the landowner is willing to do, and we'll implement those. During those same conversations, we'll utilize our experience and our field trials that we've used in the past, and we will suggest long-term solutions. I know when landowners have complaints, deer getting in their hay bales, stuff like that, we want to do our best so that they don't have to live through those stresses each and every year, especially when conditions are pretty bad. So once they agree to a tool, they will then go over an agreement, basically a WDM agreement that that they agree to, that they will allow free hunting access to non-family members. Very simple. The wildlife that come in and damages the program or damages the feed storage, we want to utilize hunters to get out there. And if the herd is too high in that area, we want to utilize hunters to reduce that population the best we can. If that tool isn't used, we do have a lot of other tools, and we'll go over those in a little bit. But throughout the process, if the tool that we're using is not working, that it was agreed upon with the landowners, we will reevaluate. We'll take probably another call or two from the landowner, and we'll use a different tool, and we'll get a little more forceful with it. And for example, I'll go over the number of complaints we get seasonally for different species, and it really is a team effort from all Game Fish and Park staff in every region, depending on the severity of the winter, what's being planted along sloughs for Canada goose depredation, and so on and so forth. But it is really it's not just a WDM program. When things get tough, it is an agency and department program because everybody chips in. I'm going to start with goose depredation. This is probably our second highest workload for WDM species. And a typical phone call is going to be on growing crops. So soybeans get planted. That's probably our number one complaint. Day County seems to be a hot spot with the amount of water. No secret, there's a lot of water up there, a lot of linear footage of field edges. And so soybeans is our number one. You can see here Canada geese have grazed down that entire field for probably 20, 30 yards up into the field. Nothing is going to grow there anymore. And down here in the bottom, you can see two examples of exactly where those geese have accessed that field. Wheat, corn, and alfalfa fields, those are probably the secondary agricultural crop that they do cause damage on. Also, harvested crop, windrowed, small grain after harvest, and then the geese can start flying again. They really key in on those areas. They just walk right down the windrow and cause damage there. So we'll get that call as well. But soybeans, when they are flightless, when they're going through the molt, is our main complaint in the summer. Some of the goose depredation toolbox tools that we use. We use a variety of hunting seasons and a combination of bag limits, hazing, which is basically scaring, using scaring devices to scare them away from the field, buffer strip program. We do have some temporary buffer programs, permanent buffer strip programs that's used with a vegetative buffer. Fencing, primarily temporary electric fencing. If you've been through Day County in the summer, you've seen it. I don't think you can drive a road where there isn't electric fence around a slough that some of our staff have put up. Nest work. We have done some nest work in the past when our population objectives are higher than what we'd like. We have done that. And then we do offer and issue kill permits to landowners that would like to, when they're in the field, take advantage of the opportunity at that time to kind of haze them out of the field. And with all these complaints, it does take a lot of staff. So we do hire 7 interns in the northeast part of the South Dakota that we call wildlife technicians. And believe it or not, that's where I started. And a lot of staff, I don't know about here in this room right now, but a lot of our staff do start out in some of these internships. Lots of communication with landowners directly. Really, they're kind of our eyes and ears in the field every day throughout the summer, so they work with a lot of landowners and build those communication communication skills with landowners dealing with the complaints themselves. Here's a couple examples of the tools. Here's that electric temporary fence I explained. This is probably our go-to tool. This is the one that's requested the most. It is electrified with a solar fencer at the end of it. We put up miles and miles and miles of it every summer. Here is more of a permanent solution, a permanent fence, woven wire 32 inches tall on some of those rivers, lake edges where that water body will never leave. It's probably a less utilized tool just because of some of the hindrances a permanent fence can add to the landscape, especially around agricultural use, but it is highly desirable in certain areas. Here's a propane cannon that we use. If you've been through Day County throughout the day fishing anywhere, you've probably heard these things go off. They're on a timer. They work fairly well. Here's an example of a permanent buffer strip. Probably not a real popular tool because it does require some smaller equipment to be able to plant this. And in today's agricultural use, not a lot of people have small drills like that anymore. But it is a very effective tool, and it looks kind of good too. And it does work. It's real simple coyote decoy. We do those on areas where Canada geese have started depredating on soybeans. We'll put one of those out and move it every week, and it does hinder some of that activity so that those beans can kind of catch up a little bit. On to deer depredation. This past winter was obviously our highest and most used tool and highest complaint. So our typical damage or our typical call for WDS is stored feed and grain. Livestock producers that have alfalfa, hay bales out in the field, silage piles in their yard. When we get that much snow, those deer herds concentrate in areas where they have a lot of cattle feed storage. So alfalfa hay, silage piles, ground hay, corn bags for ag producers now are eliminating having to haul it back to the farm. If it's wet corn, they're just filling those plastic bags up in the fields and saving time and efficiency there. So those are getting really popular now. Next would be, we get a lot of tree complaints, commercial gardens and vineyards, and sometimes in the summer we'll get growing crop complaints from corners, edges of cornfields, stuff like that, actual growing crops, which it's a little tougher to mitigate, but not a real significant number of phone calls there. As you can see, fiscal 19, again, with some more specifics, we did have 351 total deer complaints statewide, and here in the Northeast, what we call Region 4, we had just over half of those at 181. And here are some of those examples I was talking about. Ground hay pile, totally exposed to the elements and any wildlife coming through. Here's a stack of alfalfa bales out in the middle of nowhere, unfortunately, very susceptible to some damage, and you can see the damage that does get done. And if a landowner lives a ways away and shows up periodically and sees this, you can bet we're going to get a phone call. Here, some tree damage down in the bottom left. Those trees don't look pretty anymore. Very difficult to protect them and salvage them when they've gotten to this point. Especially if I think this producer went south for the winter. When they got back, this is what they came back to. So we got that phone call there. And here's those corn bags I was talking about. You can see that corn bag got ripped up from all the pressure placed on that plastic, just overstretched and eventually gave out. Here's a list of some of the tools that we do use. Hunters, when we have hunting seasons go on, that's our primary tool. We want to thin those deer out. Typically, that's what the landowner wants. We've got too many deer here. We want to get some hunters in here. We'll definitely utilize that opportunity. Hazing, again, just like Canada geese, we will scare them out. We'll provide tools for the landowners to scare them out, whether shotgun shells or cracker shells that are shot up, basically a starting pistol, pyrotechnics, basically. Pool hunts, when we don't have any hunting seasons going on, we can issue a pool hunt, get a number of hunters in there, and reduce that herd, that antlerless herd, on site. Permanent stack yards, that's one of those go-to long-term solutions. If you've got a feed yard with lots of stored feed and it's consistent annual damage, we will suggest these. They are kind of the last tool you will ever need, and we build them to meet the needs of the producer. Panels, we have temporary panels that we give out. They're 7 feet tall, 16 feet wide. We have a lot of those in inventory. We loan them out every year. We do permanent panel contracts. It's a very easy tool to kind of, it's a very versatile tool. secure covers. These are green tarps that cover up those corn bags. It's kind of a new tool we're using. I think I've got a picture on the next slide, but they're a very good tool that we're just starting to add to our toolbox. Intercept feeding, we will shortstop feed with alfalfa bales, try to get in between where they're bedding and where they're coming into feedlots or stored feed in the farmer's field or on the edge of their farm. Chemical deterrents, there are some commercial deterrents on the market. Plant skid, for example, there's some olfactory deterrents that kind of block their olfactory senses, disrupt them a little bit that they don't like, so they usually stay away from them. And then we offer a lot of technical advice. Like I said, we do try to promote long-term solutions rather than just putting a Band-Aid on every year. Not every instance does it work, but technical advice, we seem to be giving that out as often and as often as we can, and that does go a long ways. We can provide examples of, you know, if you can do this and it works with your setup, you'll have better experience with less damage in the future. I think this is my last slide. Here's an example of those secure covers. There's a 300-foot corn bag underneath that cover right there. It's puncture resistant, so those deer cannot get to that bag. They can't poke holes in it. They can't spoil the corn, mold the corn. It's a great tool that we, like I said, just started adding to our toolbox. Here in the middle is an example of what we can do for trees. We'll basically wrap them in welded wire, concrete wire, especially the ones that are very susceptible to some deer damage that have a rather large wintering deer herd in the immediate area. Here's an example of those panels I was talking about around a distiller's pile. It does require opening a gate every day in the middle of the winter, but I can assure you that deer will not get through these panels and disrupt your feeding operation. Here is an example of us intercept feeding with some of the tools we have. We have track rangers. When snow is 3 feet deep, nobody's going to blow a path out in the middle of a field to try to intercept them, so we do have the tools available to get out to where we need to. And here is an example of a permanent stackyard. It's a 7-foot high fence with panels. It's a woven wire. It's probably our best go-to option, and it's a long-term solution. Those deer will not get through those. Everybody that has these says nothing but great things about them. It's a project. It adds an element and a barrier within the yard, but like I said, we can customize them to work around you, silage trucks, haystack movers, anything like that. We do. I don't think we've built two exactly the same, so we do have lots of examples, and they do work. Real quick, I guess that was kind of a brief overview of how we get calls and complaints from landowners where wildlife are damaging some of their crop and stored feeds. So I guess with that, I'd be willing to take any questions.
Questions? Good job. No questions.
Oh, sorry. Commissioner Whitmire. Commissioner Whitmire from Day County. Kudos to you guys on the geese. I mean, that's the fencing. It's, you guys have always been out there and taking care of the concerns, especially with the soybeans. This year, especially next year, the water is now into the fields, and so that we lost that buffer of natural weed everything, I guess. But anyway, so I know next year is going to be busy, but so I thank you for being out there fighting those mosquitoes and getting that fence out there. The kill permits, I've been getting one for all these years. I use them as kill permits maybe twice, but it's more so for me and for many of my neighbors. It's permission to shoot into the group, and they're very trainable. Geese learn, and they stay out of those fields after you say you're not welcome. And having that kill permit forgiveness, should it be needed, is great too. So thank you. Great job.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.